Welcome back, folks. We have talked about a lot of controversy surrounding the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority East as it relates to a lot of their spending and a lot of things going on there, and whether or not there's been abuses in the spending of dollars or otherwise. And it has obviously caught the attention of Senator Pat Connick, who joins us now, who's setting up meetings on the possibility of reform legislation that will be introduced in the upcoming legislative session. Senator Connick, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Neil.
So tell us about your legislation and how you got from where, you know, all of these news stories about what's going on there to where we are today, and you're pulling together folks to talk about reform legislation.
You know, the session was all concerning, you know, these levy boards. You know, there's so much controversy with the East levy board, and then you look at the West, and they run in, you know, a good ship, and things are running smoothly. And working with other senators and looking at all the facts, you say, well, what's the problem with the East, SLFA East? And then it hit me after talking to the governor, because he was asking the same question, why can't the East work like the West? And it hit me that you have two different missions under one roof over on the East. You have the police protection component, which is needed, and then you have the flood protection component. And during the course of all of this, over the years, you know, the police component started overruling and overseeing the flood mission. And so my legislation is proposed. It's not, nothing's written out yet. Is to carve out the police, put them under the state police, you know, the professional, you know, state body of law enforcement, and let the police officers and the police force do its job, and then let the levy board focus on flood protection. Separate the two. And let's see if that can solve a few problems.
Senator, on the West, who actually provides law enforcement for the West Bank Levy Board?
Listen, when there's an issue in West Wego, the West Wego Police. When there's an issue in Gretna, the Gretna Police. When an issue in Jefferson Parish, the JPSO. So there's no supplemental police presence to the levy board. So, but you have an autonomous police force over in the East with a lot of money, and nobody's watching them. And I think some decisions have been made that were questionable concerning salaries and some other things. But have some oversight over that. They shouldn't be acting on their own. You know, we saw that with the Crescent City Connection years ago. They had their own police department that was, you know, they didn't do anything, but they were getting paid a lot of money. And not saying that the police on the East don't do anything. They do a good job, and I think the folks on Lakeshore and all those areas, they want them and need them. But let's make sure that they do it the right way with the right oversight.
And I guess there were two different police departments on the East, right? One for the old Jefferson Levy District, and then one for the New Orleans Levy District, and it seems as though they still operate with almost a separate chain of command in these two departments. Well, it's all one, but in what used to be two different jurisdictions.
And I think you're correct. And I talked to Pete Vicari, who's the president of the East, and he said, "Pat, you got to come see what we do." And I will do that to understand it. But we have to make sure that there's some guardrails put in into how things are done and what control does the police have over the levy board. And that's where the rub is.
The state police idea is not a bad idea, because the state police are down in the city anyway, right? I mean, they have a troop NOLA that they've established there, and it is something that the infrastructure's in place that could probably seamlessly roll in to state police. It may be that the Southeast Louisiana Protection Authority might have to provide some funding, but it wouldn't be to the extent that they're funding now.
Yeah, well, we don't, and that's something we have to look at. The funding, if there's a separation between these two groups, the levy, the flood protection, and the police, you know, the funding has to flow to the you know, continue to flow to the police that are doing the work over there. That's a mechanism we got to figure out. But we have a meeting with the governor next week to talk about this. A meeting with the ladies, who were really involved. I can't think of their name right now, but the folks who really
the folks behind the reform of the levy districts in the aftermath of Katrina, right?
Women of the Storm. That's it's going through now. Though that group is very vocal, and they want things done the right way, it needs to be done the right way. These reforms need to stay. We need the nominating committee to remain. We don't need politicians picking who's going to be on these boards. We need the engineers, these business leaders, and the academia folks to pick good people that's going to serve for the right reasons.
Senator, where is the governor going to be on that? Because he's been the one primarily that has changed that process.
I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow. I mean, next week. He's been receptive to you know, some things the Senate has done. I think he's frustrated that of all the controversy that he sees. He was dealing with a lot of issues in Baton Rouge's past session. And this one, I wouldn't say was on a back burner, but it wasn't his primary concern. And when we brought it to his attention that this is what the problem is, and I think he said, maybe you're right. But let's find out, you know, can we do it better? And maybe this legislation is a step in the right direction.
I know you, like me, I know a lot of the folks that have been past members of this authority and present members of this authority. It's really interesting, you know, because like the chairman or the president, Pete Vaccari, he's a good man. I mean, you know, he's a good person, been a great corporate partner to government, his company for a long, long time. You kind of wonder where this all went amok.
And I think it was the you know, the control of the entire organization, the flood protection by the police, and Mr. Rondino had a big voice in that. You know, when someone comes to the boss and say, this is my contract, sign it, that's a problem. And when you look at the terms of that contract, and I think you discussed it on your show, Senator Talbot did a great job of bringing that out in a committee here in Baton Rouge. It was like eye-opening. He said, this is crazy that this is even being done. And that showed me that the police presence at that levy board had more control than they should have had.
It certainly appeared that the tail was wagging a dog, right? I mean, that's what it looked like to me. Because I mean, I know you, and I know me. If I'm sitting as a chairman and someone presents that contract, I would be looking at them like they're a two-headed Gila monster or something. It's like, what are you talking about? This is ridiculous.
Right, and I agree with you. And it didn't make sense. It wasn't in the public's best interest. And it raised a bunch of red flags, and that's why we're looking into this to see what can be done to change things and just get the controversy out of that system. It's so important that we have great flood protection for the city, for the region, and we don't need all this infighting.
No, I mean, our focus has to be on preservation of the levees, improvement of the levees. None of that, as you well know, because you've been around a long time dealing with this, is cheap, right? It's all incredibly expensive. And, you know, so you want to keep your eye on the ball at all times as it relates to how every dollar is spent within the budgets of these levy districts.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I think that their budget over there is $90 million annually. It's a lot of people that need to pay, a lot of grass they need to cut, a lot of equipment they need to maintain, the gates need to be an operational, you know, doing for storms. But all that takes a lot of money, and they do a good job with the policing. I think the folks in Lakeview area want that and to supplement the NOPD. It's a lot of money, and there's a lot of money. We need more eyes on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and please keep us informed as to how this progresses as we lead up to the next legislative session in 2026. 2027,
sure,
actually. Excuse me.
Yeah.
You don't want to go back into session in 2026, right?
No, sir. We're done with that one. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, Senator Pat Connick. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We're going to go to the talk lines. I've had a number of text folks wanting to talk about what I talked about in my monologue, or we can talk about anything that you so desire. Just give us a shout, 504-260-1870. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, this is your time to weigh in on all the issues that we've talked about this week, or if there's other things that you want to talk about, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Let's go to Tim. Tim, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Newell, I know I'm not the only one that thought about this during the interview with the representative. Why can't the East Bank just operate just like the West Bank and propose legislation to just eliminate that police force on the East and just let the parish and the, you know, the different two parishes take care of that?
Yeah, you know, first off, the West Bank historically never did have a police force when it started, and the West Bank Levy District was a little bit different in the way that it was formed and governed initially than the Orleans Levy District or the East Jefferson Levy District, who both had police departments for each one of those districts. Look, there's no doubt that there could be a place to having the police force. And obviously the biggest issue for the NOPD would be staffing, right? Because they do patrol the levees. There are more neighborhoods up against the levees in both the old East Jefferson Levy District and the Orleans Levy District as opposed to the West Bank. The West Bank has a lot of levees that are up against marshes on both sides of the levee. So you don't have it as much as a public recreation space or area than the East Bank Levy District. I think where we've gone astray is they don't need a SWAT team. They don't need all of this other specialized training. Part of the challenge is, and I don't mean this, but I just got to say it. You know, when I looked at the resume of Chief Joshua Rondino, not a lot of experience. I mean, he came from the UNO Security Police Department, UNO Police Department, and not a lot of experience, quite frankly. And I think we overstated his position, and then we tried to get him more money by making him basically the HR director because he had a little bit of experience in dealing with state civil service. Well, I don't mean to offend anybody, but HR is a much more complicated issue than state civil service and having, you know, a little bit of experience there. Part of the problem with citizen boards is a lot of folks come to those boards not really understanding the construct and the governance of government operations. And I think all of this has led to where we find ourselves today. Do they do the police department's, you know, important work? No doubt about it. Again, because of the public's presence on these levees. In Orleans, they actually patrol some of those Lake Vista, Lakeview areas. They've grown accustomed to that. Is Senator Connick's proposal a viable one? Yeah, I believe it is, quite frankly. And I think if done right, it would make sense and work. But I think those are some of the fundamental differences between the nature of the levees on the East Bank versus, you know, a good number of distance or mileage of levees on the West Bank that are not right up against heavily populated areas.
All right, thanks.
Let's go to Mark. Mark, you're up. What say you?
Hi, Mark. I read the Picayune, and I constantly read about a guy named Shane Guidry, who is the governor's personal advisor, who controls this levee board. Any thought on that?
Because, well, I don't know that
they bought a dozen Tahoes way back, and I mean, it sounds like this police chief guy is getting thrown under the bus. The governor has appointed everybody and completely controls that board. Because as Shane Guidry has said, the residents of Lakeview are not complaining about all this spending.
Well, that's probably true, because they've been the beneficiary of enhanced law enforcement, NOPD, obviously overlaid with the levee district police that are located in the city of New Orleans. And they have worked out agreements to help backfill and answer calls. To what extent, I don't know. I've never seen activity reports. I don't know how many calls have actually been dispatched to them from the 911 center or otherwise. But just in theory, I can understand totally why the residents of Lakeview and Lake Vista would enjoy what they have enjoyed over the years. I don't know whether or not Shane Guidry controls the levee board. I know that he advises the governor on any number of issues, and one has been the levee board. You know, there's a fundamental difference of opinion as how these boards should be governed, and there was a belief that the previous board was doing things that was not exactly kosher. Well, unfortunately, it hasn't really revealed itself that way in any of these reports. I had the AG on the show and asked a lot of questions, because she was in the middle of this investigation. Allegedly, there was a law firm that was hired to look into this. She said on air, I didn't see anything illegal. Now, there may be a difference of opinion as to how things were handled. There could have been maybe a touch of something that might have been unethical or out of the ordinary, but I didn't find anything illegal present there. And I said, well, why don't they release the report? They say, you're holding it up. She goes, I have nothing to do with that report. That report lies within the board, and the board can release it at any point in time that they so desire. And I said, well, why? And she went on to say that I don't understand the construct of the board. They seem to have difficulty in almost anything that they're doing. And that's very much true. There seems to be a lot of uneasiness and differences of opinion in the board. It's really important, in my view, that you have a strong chairman or president of the board that understands board governance, has served in that role before, understands Robert's rules, understands that, you know, the rules that they govern themselves by need to be sacrosanct.
But aren't the governor's people who are there? I mean, the governor.
Well, they're there. Yeah. Well,
but this, and he's but this, a pass on but all the,
this is the problem. I'm just going to be honest with you. Yeah, people that are very successful in their own right, in their personal business or otherwise. But a lot of these folks have never governed as a member of a board of directors, right? And there's a fine line between whether or not you're going to be governing operations as opposed to looking at 3 to 5 year business plans and what you're going to deal with and things of that nature. You have an executive director that you hire. You have to have trust in the executive director that's going to govern the day-to-day operations. I served on a bunch of boards, and I always viewed my role as I had one employee, the CEO or the director. That was it. That was the only person that I believe that we should manage. Everybody else should be managed by the person that we hire to do that job. Folks get on that board and they don't really understand how the governance of a board, in my view, should work. And I think most would agree with me that the board should not be intimately involved in operations. I used to have this issue with school boards, and I used to challenge school boards all the time, both as an elected official and just as a caring citizen. Why are school board members picking out the paint colors on the walls in schools and what kind of carpet we have? That's not their role. But
right.
We had school board members
that shouldn't somebody on the board see that as a red flag? I mean, that's the board's job to regulate the money. I've sat on
Well, board. I mean, I don't know. But I don't know what the status of the vehicle inventory was there. Okay. I don't know. The fact that they have Tahoes doesn't surprise me. Most of the policing agencies around the country have moved to an SUV type vehicle because the other type vehicles are not as readily available as they once were. I mean, that's just a reality. So I don't want to judge them because I don't know what their vehicle inventory was like. And maybe the previous board didn't pay attention to making sure that inventory stayed up to snuff and was current. I don't know. But these are all legitimate questions.
Issues being brought to light because of the picky,
absolutely,
you know, picked up on this months ago. And hey, when the water hits the fan, it's, you know, going to be important that they're doing the right thing and not just
Mark, I think your observations are spot on, though, because the most important thing is what? Not the vehicles, not the policing, but the levee itself, the construct maintenance of the levees, right? And
well,
I don't know about you, but I'm worried about flood insurance.
And the governor's controlling it, but
we've
all come to reckon with that.
Well, but it's no different than any other governor. I mean, the reality is there have been some changes, right, in changing leadership positions on these boards, that you don't have a lot of members from previous administrations that serve for terms on these boards and things of that nature. I'm going to be quite honest with you. We have far too many boards in state government. It's a joke. We have a board for everything. I want to say there's, I know there are hundreds. I mean, I have to check that number again. I knew it at one time and I just can't recall. But if I told you the number, your response would be, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So no, I mean, we have a board for everything. it's absolutely incredible. And it's a waste of time. It's a waste of a lot of money in many respects, and we all want to protect and control and be very parochial about what happens, as though, and we should know this lesson now in the aftermath of Katrina, if the levees in New Orleans break, Jefferson Parish is likely to flood. If the levees in Jefferson break, Orleans Parish is likely to flood, and we know that now. So to have all of these disparate agencies, as we historically had, we tried to bring them all together, but still we're kind of looking at things more from a parochial standpoint, each individual parish, as opposed to regional. I think the reforms that were put in place was the first step, but quite frankly, I'm not so sure that we ever took the second and third step. And we've been stuck with this, you know, what my backyard is and what I want to see happen. Mike, Mark, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Let's go to Mike. Mike, you're up. What say you?
Hey, well, yeah, Chief.
Yeah, man.
Y'all got me yesterday on that with the judge. I see he felt like it was an act of God that he was able to hold his seat, you know, and y'all totally disagree with him, and understandably so, you know, because there's no way that looking at everything, you know, he should have lost his seat. So in his mind, I guess there's no other way for him to take and look at it as though it was the act of God. But what it reminds me of, back when Katrina had happened and the levees had broke, and I remember this religious leader had got offended when people said that the levee breaking was an act of God, and he disagreed. And he felt like it was a man-made disaster because the levees were poorly constructed. So therefore, he didn't feel like it was the act of God. So that brings us back to what you and our Metropolitan President were talking about yesterday, and how y'all looked at it. You know, that you know, it was a man-made disaster. You know, it wasn't no act of God that he was able to hold his seat. You know.
Well, I mean, Katrina, you know, Katrina as a storm, it's a term of art that's used, that it's an act of God, right? It's a weather phenomenon that's out there. No one can truly explain all of the particulars and conditions as to these weather phenomenons totally. I mean, we have a much better understanding scientifically today of how they come about and why than we ever have because of modern technology. It's a term of art. Now, you're right. The fact that the levees failed wasn't an act of God. That was an act of stupidity, quite frankly. And the way that we maintain those levees, and if you think about the 17th Street Canal, when we remove the dirt on one side of the T-wall because it was a pain in the neck to cut the grass on that side, I mean, that speaks volumes. Yeah. I mean, somebody should have checked with somebody at the levee board and engineering. I mean, the levee board's the one that did it, you know, and it's a great example to bring up on the heels of our levee board conversation. These are the things we need to be focused on, because this was a horrific error in judgment. Yes, it is difficult. But go figure out a way to get it done in a more appropriate fashion. But don't weaken the T-walls that are done by taking the dirt out so no grass grows there. I mean, not smart. And we paid the price for it, right? All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Let's go to Gregory. Gregory, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Newell, good to talk to you. I want to tell you one thing. Thank you for your recommendation about Vaca Steakhouse. Let me tell you, I've been there twice. It's terrific. It's absolutely terrific, and it's so close to home because I live at, you know, Beverly Garden, Westchester Parade, and there's Vaca Steakhouse right there. So thank you. Hello.
Yeah, Chef Carmine and his staff out there—they do a great job. They really do.
I also wanted to mention. I grew up with Mary Beth Romig in Lakeview. Her brothers were older than me. We all went to St. Dominic's School. Her first cousin, Greg, and I went from kindergarten all the way through Brother Martin. Mary Beth Romig was a cheerleader at Brother Martin in the 70s, and she too. I think the Romig family is a wonderful family. What they do for the city of New Orleans needs to be, recognized every day. Being from Lakeview and knowing that family and the Conics too, I grew up with a lot of Conics in Lakeview, not the West Bank Conics, the Harvey Conics part of the family. Not the senators, you know, he's from the West Bank. But, no, he's a good guy. But thank you for putting Mary Beth Romig on. Hey, Newell, Vaca Steakhouse is awesome. And
absolutely.
I just love your show.
Well, thank you, sir. Got to get to a break. Gregory, thank you so much for calling in. Have a great weekend. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Give us a shout. Love to hear from you. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We've been working the lines for the last half hour. Now let's go to Tom. Tom, you're up. What say you?
Thanks for taking my call, and I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, sir.
I seem to remember that there was a gentleman that lived right there at the 17th Street Canal who was a civil engineer, and he presented evidence that the pilings, the water came from under the pilings because they didn't use the right length sheet pilings when they constructed it to begin with. Do you know anything about that?
You're correct. Yeah, you're correct. I think I said T-wall, and I think I misspoke. I don't think there was
I don't think there was a
T-wall there. I think it was straight sheet pile, if my memory serves me correct.
Okay. I'm sorry if I came in on the end and it's already been discussed. But,
no, it hasn't. It hasn't. I just got another text saying that, and I started to think about it, and I think that was the issue, is that they said there should have been a T-wall there, and there wasn't when they constructed it. But I'm trying to go by memory. 20 years ago, you know, this was the hot topic, right? And can't simply grasp all of those details as I once could.
Well, you know, I can't imagine how you accumulate all of the facts and figures that you do, but I really enjoy it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tom. Truly appreciate it. Give us a call, folks, 504-260-1870. You know, we've been talking about this situation with the courthouse, and I really would desire this, but it's really difficult at the present time with the conditions. You know, setting a reset here because of this indictment of the AG, I've been on air since the very beginning when I read those letters and folks were characterizing them as threats and talking about public intimidation and all of that. And I've made the observation, I've seen those types of letters throughout my career, written by prosecutors, federal prosecutors, state prosecutors, law enforcement officials, all, you know, outlining the law, what could be done, how it could, you know, this could happen, that could happen, or otherwise. I can understand why people don't like, you know, receiving those letters. I didn't particularly like sending them, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But where we got to now and all of the mistakes that have been had throughout this process, and all you have to do is go to the books, go to the law books, you know, go to the Code of Criminal Procedure. Go to the Louisiana State Constitution. Gain a better understanding about what authority you have and what you need to do in order to comply with the law, and exercise some common sense. You know, appointing a criminal defense lawyer as a special prosecutor is not a good idea. It doesn't mean they're not qualified. You know, they can't do the job, but they have an inherent conflict, especially if they have an active practice. Why take the risk? It doesn't make any sense. But when you come to the bench from that side, so to speak, that's where your proclivity is. But you got to step outside of yourself and make the right decision for the right reasons to make sure that this is fair and impartial and, most importantly, complies with the law. And it's going to be interesting to see as to how this is going to play out. We now have a judge, Chasson, who's been appointed, served on the, I think they said, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. And hopefully we get this resolved sooner rather than later. But the problem with the reset right now is that, you know, the AG can't go meeting with all of these folks. She's under indictment. I mean, this is a serious matter. There are significant implications, not to mention all of the complications. You can't go talking to all of these folks. You can't talk to these city officials. They're the victims of the alleged wrongdoing. I mean, you know, and you're going to have all kinds of witnesses. There's been preservation of evidence letters sent out to everyone who's been identified, that I guess who's been involved in this process. That's not out of the ordinary. I received many of those in my career, you know, so that's not extraordinary. I'm sure there's going to be more as more and more people are talking about having heard this or done that or whatever it may be, you know, which is going to include emails, letters, if any, phone logs, phone conversations. there will be no stone unturned, because what has been extraordinary here is that I'm hearing that people knew about this ultimate indictment, maybe even a week or even greater in advance. Well, how did that happen? This is supposed to be a secret proceeding. Who's talking to who? And then, you know, Judge Roche puts in his recusal letter that no one from the media has said that they talked directly with a grand juror. Well, the media doesn't give up their sources. I mean, I hate to state the obvious to folks, but how stupid do you think we are, really? I mean, do you really believe that we're that stupid? I mean, come on. Read the room. Do you not understand what's going on and what the serious nature of this? This cavalier attitude is ridiculous. I remind folks all the time, you step into that voting booth, there are consequences of this. You put the wrong people in these positions of power, you may not ever think it's going to impact you until it does. And the one thing you don't want to have in life is regret. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Don Dubuque, former WWL outdoor show host. We'll talk about all of the recent black bear sightings on the North Shore. And we'll also visit with Dr. Gil Hebert in the back half of the hour, assistant professor of medicine at Tulane University. Could Ozempic be changing more than your waistline? We'll talk about new research and what it reveals. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL.